I'll go to the San Francisco County Board of Supervisors meeting. If everybody please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America
and to the republic for which it stands, one nation,
under God,
indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
This morning, as my final act as chairman, I get to make two unscheduled presentations. So I'm going to start and ask Supervisor Grover stand next to the seal of San Francisco County with me. It's my honor this morning to recognize Supervisor Grover for 5 years of service to the San Francisco County, and I have some interesting facts of what Supervisor Grover has accomplished so far in his first 5 years. He sworn in January 2003, chairman in the year 2005. Over the course of the past 5 years, he's attended 190 Board of Supervisors meetings and has passed 5,750 resolutions. Supervisor Grover, congratulations on your first 5 years. May there be many more. And the second honor I get this morning is to recognize Supervisor Tom Mayfield. Come on up, Supervisor Mayfield. It's my honor to recognize Supervisor Mayfield for 15 years of service to San Francisco County. Tom was sworn in 1993. He served as chairman twice, 1997 and 2002, and possibly 2008. Number of meetings, 535 Board of Supervisor meetings, and over 17,000 resolutions. Congratulations on 15 years of service.
Thank you, Bill.
I've enjoyed being chairman, but now has come the time that we get to elect a new chairman and vice chairman. I would make the recommendation that our vice chair would move to chairman, and the next person's turn, if you look at length of service, would be Supervisor DeMartini to be vice chair. Are you interested in doing that, sir?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. So I'm looking for a motion to elect Supervisor Mayfield chairman and Supervisor DeMartini vice chairman.
Also moved.
I have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0, and I will yield the gavel to you, Mr. Edgell.
He's driving. I won't be going far.
Oh, are we playing chairs here?
Where would I
see? You want your chair? Do you like this one? Take it.
No, it's fine.
Okay.
Fine.
How? Are you sure?
You don't have to adjust it.
You have to adjust it?
Oh, yes,
I think.
Okay.
Yeah, give me my 15. Well, thank you. Let's hope this will be an eventful year. It usually is, so we'll start with that.
Okay, my first plan of action today would be to give this plaque to our former chairman, William O'Brien, the 207 chairman of San Francisco County.
It takes us a while to change up here. It's really a pleasure for me to give you that plaque today. You've done an excellent job, and I've enjoyed working under you as vice chair. And on behalf of myself and the board, thank you for all you've done. And would you like to say a few words?
I'm okay, sir.
Oh, you're okay. Okay. All right.
my second plan this morning of action
is we have a mentor's resolution up here for Carrie. Are you going to do it? Okay, later? Okay, all right. Okay, with that, we have the public comment period. Is there anyone wishing to speak to the board this morning? I have one from Dan Tallman. Oh, you want to talk on the public hearing? Is that what you want? Okay. All right. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to speak to the board this morning? We're starting off pretty good this morning, aren't we? Okay. Let's go down to the consent calendar. I have two items to pull off. It would be B7 and B3.
Mr. Kelly, I'd just like to make a note that on B6, which is setting a date for the discussion of change to fire code, I will be voting today to set the meeting, but when we hear it, I will be stepping down because I'm a fire sprinkler contractor and there are things there that are...
This is B6?
Yeah, and I'll be voting today just to set that.
Okay. I need a motion to accept the other.
So move.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved by Jeff Grover, seconded by
O'Brien. Yeah.
Okay. And all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? 5-0. Thank you. Now we go down to B8. Keith?
Good morning, Chairman Mayfield. Congratulations. Members of the board, Keith Boggs, Deputy Executive Chief Executive Office. I'm here this morning to share briefly the accomplishments of your employee mentor program over this past year and to ask that you consider proclaiming the month of January 2008 as Mentoring Awareness Month here in Stanislaus County, consistent with the National Mentor Month distinction. I'd also like to briefly acknowledge and thank all of the employee mentors and site coordinators that make this program a success story year over year and for their commitment to young people in Stanislaus County. The Stanislaus mentor model has become an uncanny best practice for mentor sustainability in a time where most public sector mentor programs exist for perhaps 20, 24 months tops. Our team-based approach is now entering its 10th year of service. Our employees, representing all county departments, have dedicated over 12,000 personal, non-work hours to this effort. In fact, I believe as of this hour, that is 12,420.5 hours. In 2007, with the assistance from some wonderful media support, our program really began to take flight and to resonate with other public and private sector champions. The Stanislaus Office of Education, led by the energetic Tom Chenon, stepped up to our challenge and has adopted and adapted our model to his own employees. Mr. Chenon and the SCO folks will launch their own mentor initiative later this month with 56 employees representing 14 teams. In the private sector, leadership at the Macerich Group, the property management team at the Village Fair Mall, along with 15 of their employees, have single-handedly adopted Kirshen School in West Modesto, also utilizing the Stanislaus mentor model. I'm confident that the City of Modesto and other large public and private partners will join us in this coming year as we continue to engage young minds, early readers, and future leaders. Two very special individuals who really epitomize the powerful relationships that this program fosters join me this morning. I'd like to introduce Ms. Joyce Fisher and her protege, Araceli. This wonderful relationship first started when Araceli was in grade school and has grown into a lifelong friendship that we all can certainly learn from. Ms. Fisher.
Good morning. Thank you for having me today. Back in May of 1995, I was volunteering at the Parent Resource Center, and some of us had signed up to be chaperones on a kid's fishing trip. The center had partnered with Modesto Fishing Club to take over 100 kids up to Don Pedro Lake, and all the members were going to be taking the kids out in their boats fishing. The club's slogan was, "Get kids hooked on fishing, not on drugs." Students from Burbank and Bret Harte Elementary Schools were invited to attend, along with their parents' permission slips, of course. On the day of the event, there wasn't enough room on the bus for everyone, and my husband and I transported some of the kids up in our own separate vehicles. Araceli Corral was one of the sixth graders from Bret Harte School who asked to sign up, and one of only a few girls. Araceli and I seemed to just hit it off. She rode up with me in my car. And probably because we like to talk a lot, but we kind of hung out together that day and went fishing and had a pretty good time. I remember asking Araceli at some point in the day what she wanted to do when she got out of high school, and she said she wanted to be a police officer. And I was pretty impressed and taken with her. Can you imagine a teenage girl who wasn't interested in boys? I dropped Araceli off at her home that evening and met her parents. They're wonderful people. They're a very close family. And I learned that she was the youngest of five children. At the time, I was outreach coordinator for our county child support division, and I was out in the community a lot promoting events on the weekends. And I just had Araceli on my mind, and I kept wondering if maybe there was something out in the community that would be of interest or benefit to her and her family. And that's pretty much how our relationship started. It sounds pretty simple and crazy, but that's how it all began. I called her up and asked her if she would talk to her parents and see if maybe she could go out with me on some of my events. And very often she would. Sometimes her parents would bring her and she'd stay for a while, or sometimes she would stay all day. On some weekends, I would invite Araceli to come over to my house and put her to work out in my yard or washing windows so that she could have some spending money. I introduced her to the staff at Parent Resource Center, and she started volunteering down there, often doing some babysitting with the younger children, wherever they could use her. And at some point in there, I persuaded an orthodontist to accept us on a low monthly payment plan with no interest. I can still remember the look on his face when I told him he needed to get involved. When Araceli was 15 and a half, I talked to her about joining the Sheriff's Explorer program. I didn't know anyone directly involved in it, but I knew it was a great program. And she did apply, and late one afternoon she called and told me the sheriff's office had just called her and asked her to come down for an interview that evening, and where I'd come and take her, which I did. And she came out of the interview, and she was pretty disappointed, and she was pretty scared, and she said, oh, she said, that was awful. She said there were three deputies that sat on one side of the table, and they put her in a chair on the other side of the table and asked her all these questions, and she didn't think she had done well, and she probably wouldn't get in the program. And I said, well, what did they ask you? And she said, well, they wanted to know who was the sheriff. And she said, I told them I knew it was Jim Brazelton. And and they wanted to know, was he appointed or elected? And I told them, well, he's appointed. So you could tell I had been of no help to her at all. And I said, oh, don't worry about it. You can reapply. Well, evidently, she impressed the deputies anyway. And she was accepted into the program as the youngest explorer ever. And she participated until she aged out at 21. And I have to say that probably, in my estimation, this has been the most valuable thing that's happened to Araceli in her life. She saw and she learned so much. She rode out with the deputies on late night patrol. She interpreted for them often. She worked at county fairs. She testified in court. And I know it probably at least two summers she attended boot camp in San Diego. Some of her best friends today are the officers and explorers that she met in that program. My husband and I attended Araceli's high school graduation along with her parents, and we were very, very proud of her. Today, Araceli is 23. She has a full-time job working with kids that she loves. But her dream to be a police officer or a deputy sheriff hasn't changed, and it is still my hope and dream for her. As I think back to what has happened to her, I know that she'll still be able to achieve this goal. If someone would have asked me if I wanted to be a mentor to a teenage girl, I would have said no way. What would I have to offer? But my husband and I have been truly blessed to have Araceli in our lives. So I urge everyone to take the time to share what you know and mentor a child. And I'd like to introduce you to Araceli.
Thank you.
At this point, Mr. Chairman, now Carrie Stevens, our site coordinator for the County Council office, is prepared to accept the proclamation.
Good morning, Carrie.
Good morning. Mr. Chairman, members of the Board of Supervisors, Mr. Robinson, another fellow mentor, Mr. Robinson, Mr. Crosswick, a previous fellow mentor. I'm not sure how this normally goes. Do you want me to give a quick speech, or
if you'd like to know?
On behalf of all of the mentors of Stanislaus County, I would like to accept this proclamation with much pride and much pleasure. Excuse me, I have a cold, much like our previous presenter. This program touches hundreds of children in this community, and indirectly thousands of children, I estimate, over the last 10 years. It's a decade-long going. It's strong because of your vision, because of your leadership, and your continued support of this program. It remains strong after 10 years because of your unwavering support. With the support, employees, mentors have been able to positively affect the lives of children, just as the story that you've seen here today. The children have an improved chance of success. The mentors themselves benefit, and so does the county. I have spent my life in as a public servant. Those mentors who participate in this program are also public servants. It is a program like this that gives meaning to a life of public service. These employees go back to their jobs, and they understand their communities, and they understand their role as public servants, and they're better public servants because of it. So, I also know this program touches individuals, but also their mentors personally, and I can say simply that my life is more fulfilled because of this program. So it is for all of these reasons that I thank you for your continued support of this program. I'm confident that the program will succeed over the next 10 or 20 or 30 years, and that as we look back on the program 4 years ago, our predecessors will say that this was a program in its infancy today. I am hopeful that it will succeed as it does today. I'm confident it will with your support, and I thank you on behalf of all the mentors.
As she makes her way around, I would also like to thank those persons who are so generously contributing of their time. Something that many don't understand is that these mentors do serve the youth of this community on their own time during their lunch hours, and they sacrifice their own time for the benefit of the youth in our community. It is an extraordinary and exceptional program. Keith Bonds deserves significant credit for its ongoing and continued success.
Anyway, thank you, Rick, for that. And on behalf of myself and this board, Carrie, I'd like to give you that. And, you know, I told you it was blank. Okay. Anyway, no, you're gonna get a new one. Okay. Come on up, Keith. Come on up here. Keith's been instrumental in this from day one. So let's give him a chance to get into the action up here. Okay? Thank you, Keith, and thank you, Carrie, and thank all the ones that have mentored for the county. It takes a lot of time, a lot of effort, and on behalf of myself and the board, we thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Would you like to say something?
I just echo the comments that were made by Mr. Robinson. Keith is really the reason that this program is as successful as it is, along with the board's support. He really has been just great.
I'll give you that $20 later.
Okay. Would you like here?
Not so. I talk often enough.
Thank you. Well, that's why I brought you up here. Thank you. Now I have to go back to the item report of the consent calendar. It would be B7 and B3. I'm sorry about that.
Yes, I will speak to item B3, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
This is a request for Board of Supervisor authorization for the Chief Executive Officer to submit an application to the California Department of Transportation's Community-Based Transportation Planning Grant Program for $250,000 for the development of a Stanislaus County Growth Management Strategy. This, in concept, has been before you for funding requests, the program for funding requests on prior occasions. The concept, of course, is that the nine cities and the county develop a strategy and a plan to work collaboratively to identify the likely areas of growth within Stanislaus County in the next 40 to 50 years and begin to plan for the infrastructure needs of the region collaboratively. This is an outgrowth of the mayor's initiative, and staff is requesting your support. This does have a 25% match, which $50,000, of which $25,000 is expected to be an in-kind match. $25,000 is the maximum county exposure we're anticipating, although we have not yet specifically confirmed that the cities will pick up a substantial portion of the remaining $25,000.
Yes, Dave.
This concept has been brought before us, I believe, twice previously, and hopefully discussed among the board. I'd say probably four or five times more. I think the concept may be correct, but I believe it's creating another bureaucracy. We've never been able to get the city to agree going into this process. In fact, we haven't been able to get the city to become vested in the program. They have come to us at times and asked us, the board, to finance the program in itself. That was turned down. I believe that we already have the people in place. I think we have Sam Goff. We also have the cities have their management. And I believe it's a matter of organizing everyone together rather than starting another bureaucracy. The other thing is, as I read it, it says that we are still working out between the county and the city. I believe this should be resolved before we go into this. But we're into not everyone's in agreement, apparently. And if everyone's not in agreement, I don't see where this is going to have my success. So I personally believe that this is not the approach. Some of you may differ, and that's quite all right.
Okay.
Those are the reasons why I will not be voting for this.
Supervisor Grover.
I think that this is an effort that is in great need in our county. We have worked together closely with the nine cities for a long, long time. This is an opportunity that a representative from Caltrans came to a STANCOG meeting and pointedly made sure that we all realized that this money was available, and I think he had in mind exactly this effort, which is badly needed if we're going to have any chance of having a well-run county in the future when the population growth continues. I couldn't support it stronger, and I'd like to move for approval.
O'Brien.
Regional planning in this county has to occur. I don't think we can all look back and say that the planning we've done over the past couple of decades has resulted in the result that we want. And I think we need to come together with the cities to create a single vision of where we're going to grow in this county and where we're not going to grow in this county. And in order to do that, we need to come together and do this. As I read this, this will fund our existing staff and our existing agencies to create this process, and I don't see a new bureaucracy being created out of this. I will second Supervisor Grover's motion.
Supervisor DiMartini.
Yes, we're also in agreement with Supervisor Grover on this. I just cannot see how a cooperation between the cities and the county would be called a creating a new bureaucracy. The cities and the counties have to work together. We have growth issues, transportation issues, water and sewer systems that are, it's important that we work together. We have had several meetings through the couple of years that I've been here, and it stopped right now, but we need to get these back on track. I think that the cities will come up with some of the money, but as always, the county has to lead the way in getting this accomplished. We can work together for growth management and a lot of issues that is really going to be the benefit to everybody. If we don't sit down at the same table together, we're never going to be talking about the issues that are so important to us. So I'm in full support of this. And it is requesting a grant, and so we still have a long ways to go, but we need to get these talks back on track again.
May I make a conditional comment?
Yes.
I'm not disagreeing of cooperation and working. My question is, there seems to be a lack, and until that agreement comes between the city that they're willing to step forward and work together as a unit, I do not believe this is going to accomplish what we're trying to do. I believe that we have people in the cities and the counties that have already tried to work together. I've been involved in some of that. And I think that we first have to establish the fact that it's a want-to, and we need all nine counties, nine cities in addition to the county, before we can be successful with it. And I believe that should be done first, and that's my major objection.
We have a motion before the board made by Jeff Grover and seconded by Bill O'Brien. The question number, the call for the question. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No. 4-1. Thank you. The next one we have to go is B7.
And while we're getting ready for B7, I believe we need to vote on B8.
Yeah, B8. We need a motion.
We need a motion on that to approve the staff report.
Okay. We need a motion on B8.
So moved.
Made by Bill O'Brien.
Second.
Seconded by D. Martini. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? 5-0. We're ready.
Good morning, Chairman Mayfield, members of the board, CEO Robinson, and County Council Krosnick. My pleasure this morning to present to you a brief overview of the policy that's before you this morning, a new addition to our county personnel policies to establish a lateral hiring incentives program here in Stanislaus County. The purpose of what we're trying to accomplish with this policy is we're setting out to try to attract well-qualified candidates from other public agencies whenever possible. We have scenarios where employees are commuting to other jurisdictions throughout the valley or even into the Bay Area where they would prefer to work for Stanislaus County, but there are certain barriers for them to make the transition from their current employment to a career here with Stanislaus County. We also recognize the benefits of hiring trained, experienced employees and the benefit that provides us in substantially reducing the amount of time it takes to train a new employee without experience that we would have with lateral transfers. This proposed policy would provide some additional incentives to attract experienced lateral transfers. This would only apply to lateral transfers in positions that we classify as hard to recruit. To be classified as a hard to recruit position in this county, there would have to be a substantial history of our inability to attract lateral candidates to the position. We're not talking about all positions in the county. I'll provide some examples of what some of those may be in just a moment. The other thing I'd like to point out is that this policy requires a chief executive officer to approve any implementation of any of the incentives in this policy upon the recommendations of the appointing authority or the department heads. If I could take just a moment to define what we're talking about when we refer to lateral candidates. Lateral candidates are applicants who are already performing in the same job capacity in another government agency. So an example of those would be like nurses, engineers, peace officers, including deputy sheriffs, deputy probation officers, attorneys in other counties or local agencies as well. So in these scenarios, you have employees who have for many years performed in that capacity, but they've expressed an interest in coming to Stanislaus County in the same job capacity. We're not talking about candidates who are coming to promote into a new level of career. They're simply making a lateral transition from their current agency to Stanislaus County. In our recruitment of these particular individuals, we've had a lot of difficulty in getting them to make that transition. Some of the candidates would prefer to work in our county, and they're even willing to accept a reduction in pay. The reality is that many of the agencies that they would be leaving from to come to Stanislaus County are already paying or have higher paying wage scales than Stanislaus County may have, and those candidates are willing to accept, in some cases, slight reductions in pay. But what they're less willing to do is to forego the availability of their vacation time or the security that they currently have in their current positions with sick leave and their permanent status in their classified positions. So I'll go ahead and go through what the proposed policy includes. In terms of salary step placement, the policy would allow for these lateral candidates, specific lateral candidates in hard to recruit positions, for us to appoint a candidate up to step 5 in the salary schedule if that person is already earning more than step 5. This currently requires board approval, and we routinely bring these matters before the board, and they are typically approved by your board. What you usually see is an agenda item stating that this candidate already earns a higher level of salary in another jurisdiction, and that we're requesting the board's approval to bring them in at step 5. In making this recommendation, this would allow us to cut several weeks off of the processing time for us to bring on a lateral transfer. Oftentimes we're in a competitive recruitment market, and our ability to bring somebody in several weeks ahead of time or make a job offer with that salary may make the difference in them joining Stanislaus County versus another local agency. The other aspect of the proposed policy includes vacation accruals. Lateral transfers may start at a higher rate than new employees, and that we would take into consideration the amount that they are receiving with their current employer. The easiest way for me to describe this is that currently when we recruit a lateral transfer, let's say we have an engineer from another local jurisdiction who would like to join Stanislaus County, if they have, you know, 8 or 9 years of experience and are currently receiving 3 weeks of vacation pay each year, when they join Stanislaus County, we require them to start over as a brand new employee. We currently do not recognize the fact that they have many years of experience, even if they're just laterally transferring over. This policy would allow us to bring them in at a higher rate of vacation accrual in recognition of the fact that they're currently earning more vacation in their current position. In no instance would we allow an employee to come in and start earning more vacation than what they currently earn. We would merely slot them in to the closest vacation accrual rate that they're currently at to provide them that higher level of vacation. The next aspect of this policy includes sick leave accruals. One of the things that we hear often from lateral candidates in considering leaving their current jurisdictions are that they currently have a bank of sick leave that's available to them. Many of these individuals also have families to consider as well. And it's difficult for them to join in a position where they will start in a new position with zero sick leave on the books. So if they have an ill child or something like that, they have no time available for them to take care of that person. This policy would allow us to start a lateral transfer in a hard-to-recruit position with up to 48 hours of available sick leave. To make up for that, what we will do is not allow that person to accrue sick leave for 6 months. So they will not accrue any additional sick leave. They're merely going to start with 48 hours. After 6 months, they'll begin to accrue their sick leave. Our sick leave accruals are based, you would earn 48 hours in 6 months. So it's merely starting them on their first day at the point that they would have been after 6 months of being here with the county. This is a similar benefit than to what we currently provide for county management. So this issue is specific to non-management positions. County managers, we are able to front load their sick leave accruals for new employees. And that has helped us in the recruitment of some management staff. The last aspect of the policy I'd like to discuss is probationary period. County policy currently requires 12 months of service to qualify for permanent status. This provision would allow an appointing authority to grant permanent status after 6 months for a lateral transfer And this is a lateral transfer who has already obtained permanent status in another agency. The candidates are hesitant to relocate and give up their job security if they're moving from one area to the other. And what they'll explain to us, if they're going to move their family to our jurisdiction, they want to have some kind of reasonable assurance within a period of time that that they would be made permanent and enjoy the same job security that they have in their current positions. This provision does not grant automatic permanent status, but it reduces the period of time that a department head may grant permanent status from 12 months to 6 months. They still have to perform in their positions, and they still have to earn the recommendation of the department head to make them a permanent employee. The department heads can still require them to work 12 months, but this would allow a department head who has a lateral transfer, who has already worked several years in another agency, has gained permanent status, and who comes to Stanislaus County, and after 6 months of demonstrating their ability to perform the work, that department head to recognize their abilities. That brings the conclusion of my presentation this morning. I'd be happy to answer any questions. In presenting this policy, we're not intending that we're going to resolve all of our recruitment and staffing issues here in Stanislaus County, but we certainly do view this as an additional tool that would provide some of the department's flexibility in hopefully attracting some of the skilled, experienced employees and reduce the amount of training time that are necessary for us to provide service to the county.
Supervisor Bryan.
Yeah, a couple comments. First of all, I know specifically, say, the Sheriff's Department, how hard it's been to attract lateral recruitments. And I've tried and looked at ways to what we can do to create a better lateral transfer program. However, I have a couple of concerns with this proposed policy. Number one, the Board of Supervisors has had the right to review any salary higher than midpoint. And although I have complete confidence in our current CEO, it's not a oversight that I'm willing to give up. The Board of Supervisors has that oversight. We're responsible for that oversight, and not something I'm willing to give up. Second question or comment has to do with the sick leave. If we were to get a lateral transfer over who was able to cash out their sick leave at their previous employment, would we also front load their sick leave here?
We could. We could consider it on a case-by-case basis. But to answer your question, it's rare that other employee agencies cash out sick leave at 100% of the value. In many instances, those employees are leaving with 0 to maybe 25, at the most 50% of the value of their sick leave.
Yeah. I would have a problem if they were able to cash out their sick leave and then we front load them. Those are my comments.
Supervisor Montes.
My understanding is that If a person has certain benefits from another government agency that came in, we will never accept what exceeds our current policy with our current staff members, correct? In other words, we have benefits and we have our pattern, or our schedule rather. If someone comes in from a different jurisdiction or different county or whatever it may be, and their benefits are greater than ours, we do not extend those benefits over our current schedule. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, that's my major.
Anyone else?
Yeah, I'm comfortable with the way it's written. I think in this time of the government trying to compete with the private sector, we're facing a stiff challenge, and if we wanted to modify it so that the board looks at those issues that Supervisor O'Brien, the few times that it goes over that point, I'd be fine with it, but I'm comfortable the way it is also.
Supervisor DeMartini?
The way I read this agenda item, this only is for other public organizations. This is other public entities. So say if we were to hire a nurse out of Memorial Hospital, then this wouldn't apply. It would only have to be from a government agency.
That's correct.
Okay, now that was my question, because I wasn't sure. Nurses are hard to hire a lot of times, too, and that was one of the classifications, and they wouldn't not necessarily come from another government agency. Overall, I'm okay with this. I don't think that it, you know, is anything unreasonable. It's only a few positions that are hard to get. Supervisor O'Brien would want to modify this a little bit. I mean, I'd be willing to look at that. But overall, I'm okay with this. But I would be agreeable to some modifications. The board would have to look at this in some instances.
Well, we can't pass this if we're going to modify it.
We do have an opportunity if the board would consider it. The appointment above mid-range is addressed in point one of the policy under the salary step placement. We could remove that and retain the balance, and that would still give us some significant discretion in exercising this lateral hiring incentive policy. Would still leave with the Board of Supervisors the authority to approve or deny appointments above the midpoint of the range, but it would preserve the balance of the proposal.
Okay. Are you comfortable with that, Bill?
Yeah, I'll make a motion that we approve this policy without the salary, that the Board of Supervisors still retains the authority to appoint a salary higher than midpoint.
Okay. Okay, and we have a motion by Bill O'Brien, second by Dick Montes. Call for the question. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Pass 5-0.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Okay, with that, we go back to, let's see what we got here next.
The public hearing.
Public hearing. That's right. We have a public hearing, 9:20.
Congratulations, Chairman Mayfield. Good to see you.
Maybe too soon.
I just want to be the first.
Okay.
Once in my life. This is a presentation regarding a rezone application, 2007-01 Santa Fe Crossings, and it's in the Houston area, and Josh Mann will present to you the Planning Commission's recommendation with respect to this rezone.
Thank you, Director Paredes. Good morning, Chairman Mayfield and members of the Board of Supervisors. What we have is rezone application number 2007-01 Santa Fe Crossings. This is a request to rezone a 14.25 acre site from an existing plan development number 185 to a new plan development that allow a commercial project to be developed in three phases. The location is at the intersection of Gear and Santa Fe, just south of Service Road, also south of the city of Houston. It is currently within the sphere of influence for the city. The existing general plan designation is for plan development. And a little bit of background on these designations for the general plan and zoning. The plan development general plan designation was established in 1986 as part of a comprehensive general plan update. The Board of Supervisors at that time designated certain locations as plan development, given the unique characteristics of each property. This property, given its shape and location, was one of those. The zoning for the property in February of 1991 was rezoned from A240 to plan development number 185, which allowed for a variety of commercial type uses. This shows the existing zoning. Just north we have the fertilizer sales and radio station. Phase one would consist of the construction of mini storage units and legalize an existing container storage sales business. It also would continue the use of an existing truck repair facility that was established under the previous zoning. The length of time would be 5 years from the date of approval. This shows some elevations of the mini storage. Doesn't have the landscaping on there. Phase two would convert the existing truck repair facility into an RV sales and service business and convert the storage container business to RV and boat storage. Length of time is 2 to 7 years from approval. Finally, phase three would be construct a gas station, mini mart, and coffee shop in the southern portion of the property, as well as construct a car wash and retail building just north of that. Length of time would be between 3 and 7 years from approval. This shows a conceptual idea of what the buildings would look like. And the applicant has asked, as far as phasing goes, that the be extended up to 7 years from approval for phase three. Normally, staff recommends that the phasing be for a shorter period of time, around 5 years. Some of the concerns that staff would have with this would be possible changes in county policy, tracking of multiple phases over a long time period, and changes in industry and technology. Some of the options that are presented to the Planning Commission were to approve the project as proposed with the 7 year time frame, or require a use permit for the approval of phase three, or add a condition of approval that states the planning director review the third phase and approve at his or her discretion. The Planning Commission recommended that the applicant be given a total of 5 years with the ability to come back and request an extension. Some of the signs that are proposed would be a single 20-foot high pole sign and two secondary signs, which would be located at the two driveway locations, one here and one on Gear. The pole sign would be at the southern portion of the property. The Planning Commission on an 8-0 vote recommended approval of the rezone application number 2007-01 based on the development standards and actions outlined in pages 5 and 6 of the Planning Commission staff report. That concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Is there any questions, staff?
I have two questions. First of all, you showed an elevation without landscaping. Will landscaping be required?
Yeah. You can see during each phase it would correspond with the construction for that. You can see along here, they show some landscaping around here.
And along
also those landscapes along Santa Fe.
Okay. And was there any City of Houston objection to the project?
No. City of Houston said it was consistent with their service commercial for that area.
Great. Thank you.
Any other questions before I open the public hearing? Okay, I'll open the public hearing. Is there anyone like to speak on this matter? Dan?
I'm Dan Tallman. I'm representing Sierra Grain Terminal. We have a large ag operation at the southeast corner of Santa Fe and Muir. It includes rail receiving, feed manufacturing, almond farming. We have associated functions that are 24 hours a day with an ag business, which includes train switching, tree spraying, harvesting, and trafficking out of the facility along with the manufacturing. And we just want to be on record that we plan to continue our operation there into the future. And we always have a concern when there's a non-ag operation moving into the neighborhood. Not that it's we're opposing the project. We just need to make sure that we're protected long-term for what we're doing there. We also currently have a traffic control issue that I think you guys have already addressed at the corner of Santa Fe and Gear. But we would ask that that be dealt with prior to any further development in the area.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to speak on this?
Good morning, Chairman Maple, Supervisors, Rod Hawkins, Hawkins and Associates Engineering, just speaking on behalf of the project. We understand the location of the associated feed. I worked on that project myself, and there's no anticipated conflict between the projects as far as we're concerned. And Dan, you're correct. The county has a pending project there for the traffic signal at Gear and Service. And so I think what we've got proposed, especially with phase one, is a very minimal traffic impact with mini storage. So I think it's a good project, well suited for this location. And I'd just like to thank staff for all their help and efforts in this development, and continue to cooperate with staff, and I'm here to answer any questions if you have them.
Any questions from the board?
I just wondered, you're asking for still for 7 years to phase in all of it?
We accept the Planning Commission's recommendation for the 5 years.
5 years.
Request for the extension, yes.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else? If not, I'll bring it back to the board. I'll close the public hearing, bring it back to the board. My concern is that 7 years would be too much. I would like to tie it down to 5 years. So if you're okay with that, we can move.
I'll move approval with the 5-year condition.
Okay.
I'll second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded by Jeff Grover and seconded by Bill O'Brien.
Mr. Chairman, will they still be able to ask for an extension at 5 years?
That's correct.
It is. Okay.
They will?
Yes.
Okay. Well, why do we pass it then if they can ask for an extension?
I mean, it doesn't mean you have to approve it.
Pardon me?
It does not mean you have to approve the...
Okay, they can ask for it.
That's correct.
Doesn't mean it's a given.
That's correct.
Okay. Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? 5-0.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll go down to... would be B9.
Yes, Chairman Mayfield, members of the Board of Supervisors, this item addresses salaries of elected officials. It would amend salary and position allocation list to reflect salary increases for each of the 6 elected department head classifications. Additionally, if approved, it would establish a new process for evaluating elected department head salaries prior to the candidate's filing period for each elected department head election. Fiscal impact for this item, if approved by the Board of Supervisors, has in first year is $67,000 annually. For the rebalance of the 6 months in the 2007-2008 fiscal year, that would be $30,000. We anticipate most of that, if approved by the board today, would be absorbed by the department's existing operating budets. The 6 elected department head positions include the district attorney, sheriff, coroner, auditor, controller, treasurer, tax collector, county assessor, and county clerk and recorder. Our elected department heads are provided a flat salary set by the Board of Supervisors and do not participate in the county's paper performance systems. Salaries for elected department heads were last evaluated and adjusted based on a survey of comparable counties in 2001. The elected department heads, however, have received cost of living adjustments consistent with those increases provided for non-elected department heads and county managements. Recommendations that are before you today are intended to align and group department head salaries through the county based on size and complexity of department operations, special education certification requirements, and review survey data of comparable counties. In this particular recommendation, the grouping would establish the sheriff, coroner, and district attorney in the same overall grouping as the Health Services Agency Director, Community Services Agency Director, Child Support Services, Public Defender, Public Works, and Behavioral Health and Recovery Services Director. The position of Auditor Controller, Assessor, and Treasurer Tax Collector would have their own salary range at $147,975, and the County Clerk and Recorder would be aligned with the Agricultural Commissioner, Alliance WorkNet, General Services Agency, the County Librarian, our Regional 911 Director, SBT Director, the Director of Animal Services, and our Area Agency on Aging Veteran Services Agency Director. The intent here is to establish a continuity and rational relationship between the salaries offered to elected department heads, other county department heads, and the survey counties selected by Stanislaus County for measuring. The other part of this recommendation reflects a recommendation that you, on an ongoing basis, and that is before the filing period for each election, evaluate and approve a salary which would then be set for the term of those persons seeking public office in one of these six positions.
Is there any questions from on this proposal from the board?
I would just like some clarification on the clerk recorder. And notice in comparison to other counties, you're only able to, or at least you're only showing Ventura County as the only comparable salary. But I know that every county has elections. There must be some department head there that you could have checked to see what the salary was for comparative purposes.
Well, every county has elections. The clerk and recorder side is often lumped or categorized with another department head. We've seen auditor recorders. We've seen assessor recorders. There are just a variety of Fresno County is an assessor recorder. Kern is an assessor recorder. Monterey is an assessor clerk recorder. Sacramento is director of finance. With the auditor, treasurer, tax collector. San Joaquin is the assessor/clerk recorder. Solano assessor recorder. Sonoma assessor recorder. And Ventura is the clerk recorder, registrar of voters, clerk of the board. So there are so many variations the categorization of responsibilities. Certainly, the elections officer is a critical position. But not the sole responsibility of the holder of this particular office.
Okay. Is that the reason why the clerk recorder is listed separately at a lower salary scale than the tax collector, auditor, and assessor then? What was the reason for that?
Well, there are special requirements for the auditor, controller, assessor, and treasurer tax collector. To hold those offices. That is not the case with the clerk recorder. Clerk recorder can essentially be anybody who runs for and is elected to public office. The other positions do have requirements that must be met for an individual to occupy the positions and special expertise in an area necessary to fulfill the duties and responsibilities of the office. The clerk recorder is essentially a learn on the job type of a position and has traditionally followed that methodology. That's not to say that the board, if it chose in your deliberations today, couldn't change that to better meet your expectation of where the clerk recorder should be. This simply is staff's recommendation based on the best information we have available to us.
Rick, but as you looked at these salaries, you compared to eight counties, were we not above the average?
We were above the average on some, below the average on others, and what we attempted to do was to both give weight to the salaries paid in the eight counties and to reflect the salaries that we pay our own department heads who have the same or similar types of responsibility. As an example, the sheriff, coroner, and district attorney have highly specialized responsibilities with large workforces, as does the Health Services Agency director, CSA director, and those others that you identify with the salary that is established or was recommended for the sheriff, coroner, and district attorney. We're trying to establish some reasonable relationship between the reasonable relationship that can be duplicated on a go-forward basis between these six positions, the county positions, and the county survey.
Would this be something that comes up every year?
No. If you establish and approve the item as it is proposed to you today, then the next time it would come before you is prior to the filing period for the election at which these six positions would be running for office.
But you also put a, some kind of review committee. What would their purpose be if this is a one-time thing? What would that review committee be?
Well, the review process.
For what?
The review process would be utilized to identify and recommend to the Board of Supervisors prior to the filing period for these six positions a revised salary that would go into effect upon the completion of the election of the six positions. One of the complaints and criticisms, if you will, of the process as it exists today is that an individual can run for office with an established salary, not knowing whether that salary is going to go up or down or what's going to happen. My recommendation establishes, if approved by the Board of Supervisors, would establish a process that's a duplicatable process that would cause in each election cycle would cause the six salaries to be evaluated against salaries within the county and salaries of the survey counties. Recommendations to come to the Board of Supervisors, and then the Board of Supervisors would act in your policy setting capacity to approve or deny the recommendations made for the salaries of the six positions prior to the filing period for the office.
Bill O'Brien. You're better, Brian.
A couple things. First of all, I have no problem with what the salaries are listed, what they could go to. County clerk recorder, there could be some debate on that. I do think that the three auditor, controller, assessor, and tax collector who have specific requirements should get something more for that. So that could be a point of debate. The best part of this policy is that it sets the salary for the next term when an election occurs. I've always been in favor of that. I have never supported an increase for an elected official midway through their term. Something I just don't believe in. I believe the salary should be set for that term of the elected official at the beginning of their term, and that's what they serve at. And that's how I will vote again today, is that my opinion is the salary set at the beginning of the term, and that's what they get paid for the entire term that they serve, every four-year period in this case. With the exception of COLA, I understand COLAs occur.
Okay. Supervisor Mundy.
Well, I understand what Supervisor O'Brien is saying, but I don't know what Supervisor O'Brien is saying, but I don't know of any office where you know if you're going to get a raise or not. I would like for someone to point out to me what person who is elected knows if they're going to get a salary increase during their term. We don't do it in state. We don't do it in federal. I haven't seen it done in any elected office whereby you know when you run for office, you know what you're running for, but I have yet to see any place whereby you know if you're going to get a salary increase or not. So I'm having difficulty understanding the value of that.
Anyone else?
My understanding was these salaries haven't changed since 2001.
That's correct, other than the cost of living adjustments that are afforded to all other management employees.
So what you're saying today is that there is no raises for any elected official. When he runs for the office, he knows what he's making. Now, does he get anything from that point on to when his term is up? Does he get cost of living? Does he get everything else everybody else gets?
The elected officials get cost of living adjustments. The elected officials are not in a band, however, so they're not eligible for pay for performance increases as other department heads are that are represented in a salary band. So the elected official salary is set at a specific level. They are eligible for and receive cost of living adjustments that other department heads receive. However, they do not receive the pay for performance increases within the salary band established for department heads.
So you're saying they do get adjustments?
They do get the cost of living adjustments.
Okay. So to say they stay is exactly what they ran for the office for is not right then. They do get adjustments.
That's correct. That's what I said.
Right?
Yes.
Okay. Anyone else?
I'd like to move approval of the item as written.
It's been moved by Jeff Grover that we approve it. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
It's been seconded by Dean Martini. I'll call for the question. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
No. Motion defeated. 3-2. Now we go on down. Go on, correspondent.
This board has received a letter from the University of California requesting a resolution of support for a medical school in the San Joaquin Valley to be sent to the UC Board of Regents.
Refer this to the Chief Executive Office.
This board has received a letter from the State Senator Cogdell and Denham requesting the county to participate in the 2010 U.S. Census Bureau Local Update for Census Addresses Program.
Refer to the Department of Planning and Community Development and Stanislaus County Council of Governments.
This board has received a letter from the California Department of Housing and Community Development requesting funding assistance for affordable seasonal rental housing and support services for migrant farm workers' families.
Refer this to the Department of Planning and Community Development.
This board has received a notice from the State Fish and Game Commission regarding proposed regulatory action relating to nuisance Canadian geese.
Refer this to the Department of Parks, Recreation, and the Fish and Wildlife Commission.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
We'll acknowledge receipt of claims and refer to the Chief Executive Office, Risk Management Division. Is there any Board of Supervisors report? Jim Martini?
No, I'm not going to make any comment. I've been in the paper every day this week, and I just...
Television, radio.
I think there's been enough said already, and I just, maybe next week.
No one else? Okay. Any legislative fiscal and management report?
Not this morning.
Okay. Okay, well, we are adjourned. Pardon me.
Mr. Chairman, closed session. We have two items, both existing litigation. The first is Juan Madrigal versus the County of Stanislaus. The second is the City of Modesto versus Wade Ramsey. Both are brought to pursuant to Section 54956.9.
Okay. Then we have a closed session today. Okay. We will adjourn and go to closed session. Do we expect to come back out and do anything? No. Okay. We're through.